Position number 22081, Rule 10.
Mr. Gray, Rule 10. So,
yeah,
Mr. Gray, we're talking
in
about
the north of Italy when the war ended, because we had a bit of celebration then. When the war ended, we was in the north of Italy then. That's right.
How do you remember celebrating then?
Well, we all got together and we had some sports and what have you, I think, when, you know, that finished. And of course, we had a drink and a sing song sort of thing, and the super signals did, you know. Well, I think I was up here Florence, up there somewhere, I reckon. I remember we were through Foria, but that was real.
Now, you mentioned encountering Tito's partisans.
Yeah, they were they were Croats and Muslims, what they are now, what's the trouble, like, you know. But they were disorganised. I don't know what happened to Tito. He held them all together during the war, but when that finished, they were just like a lot of bandits raiding and fighting for grub and all this sort of thing, you know. But our battalion had the job of disarming quite a lot of them, you know, and took the horses off a lot of them, you know, as well.
Now, apparently, you also encountered, according to the battalion history, Russians that had worked for the Germans, that were fighting with the Germans. Have you got any specific memories of these men?
Them Russians were real rough characters, and there was a lot of women with them, and they were bold, but they were in the forces, like the Russian women, you know, and they were some rum characters, they were. But the first time we come into any smart Russians is, of course, when we faced in Vienna, like.
Yeah, which we'll get to that. But at this stage, what was your opinion of these Russian troops that had fought for the Germans? Did you have an opinion of them?
Well, my first impression was a real rough lot, really, you know. And it was funny because the places we come where the Russians had been, there was either the very old people or the little kids, like, you know. There'd been a lot of problems with their way of life. Because we heard stories of all sorts about them raping some of the Austrians and all that sort of thing, or filling up, like, you know. But they were a rough little crowd when we first saw them. But these, like Tito's lot, they were a real lot of bandits, I would say, you know what I mean?
What about the German troops that had...
Of course, there was a lot of prisoners there. There were people who had them in prison camps there, weren't there? Some of the company lads were looking out, but watching them, you know, because they're all shedded in compounds, sort of thing, you know. Yeah, there was quite a lot there, but they were all sorts there, see, you know, they weren't all Germans, they were, you know. Yeah, there was loads and loads of them there.
And apparently, according to the battalion history, there was the battalion had to kind of disarm these Russian troops and then hand them on, and then they would be going back to Russia. Did you know about this at the time?
Oh, yeah. I see a company was disarming quite a lot of them, you know, Russians and all sorts, because you don't know which side they were on, really.
What did you think about them being sent back to Russia?
Well, I don't suppose they couldn't care less, really.
So people weren't that bothered about that?
No.
Yeah. Now, apparently, the horses that you took off these men, some of these were acquired by the battalion, the army.
Oh, yes, I always thought of them. I tried to ride one once. I'd never been on a horse in my life before, and I was all right going up the hill, but of course we'd be a back like, when I come down, I was hanging over his neck, you know.
So it didn't replace...
Some of the officers, of course, they were, you know, used to riding, you know, horses, and they were, you know, quite enjoyed it, didn't they? They had some horse races and all sorts of them, yeah.
Was there any other kind of war booty? I think the battalion history talks about a staff car being appropriate.
Oh, yeah, the Mercedes, and one of them, the war had a Mercedes there. Been handed down from the company's got it. Of course, he had to finish up with it, didn't he? The CEO sort of thing.
Who acquired it in the first place, do you remember?
That was one of the company. There, then. Was Vizard still with us then? It was one of the company's blokes that had it. The company officers, but I said the colonel finished up with it. But then after then there was quite a lot of vehicles kicking about, you know. There was all sorts of...
What else, what other material did you require then at this stage as the battalion?
Well, they had more than one later on, you know, they had, I think, two, three. There was some BMWs kicking about more bikes as well, you know.
Did you ever get a chance to ride the German?
Yeah, but we want to play about them, you know.
So there was no move to kind of...
You see, if we got anything, that was immediately took off us, sort of thing, you know, really.
Who by?
Well, the officers really, and it went back, and of course it finished back the brigade and did, I suppose, you know, all that sort of thing.
So if you did get your hands on a captured motorbike, you wouldn't have it for
really
long?
Oh, I wouldn't have it 10 minutes, like, no, not really. Mm-hmm. When we got to, I think, into Austria, there was this non-fraternisation business, you know. Well, I think we got in Bruckel, and there was a little row of cottages along the bottom, and they kicked the people out of the, like a room like this sort of thing, you know, and we put four of us singles in it, you know, and you couldn't talk to nobody, and they hated the sight of us, didn't they, really, the women, really, because we kicked them out of the building, and we lived in there, and I think we was there about 6 weeks, and then they lifted the frat bar, and then we can talk to them, and after a while, you know, they got used to it, and their attitude changed, sort of thing, you know. But obviously we were giving them a kind of bullying, a bit of grub or something, they were a bit short of food, sort of thing, you know. But so we stopped there quite a fair while around that area in Bruckel, and it turned out all right. But to start with, you know, they kicked the people out of the, well, didn't kick them out of the house, but kicked them out of the room, and they put about 40 into the room, like, you know, and sleep on the floor or something.
Did the troops obey the non-fraternisation rule before it was lifted?
Yeah, I did. We lived with these people, like the old fella and a couple of young kids, you know. Because at the end, there was no in-between age group. They'd all either in the war or doing something, you know.
Did you ever encounter people at this stage that were still kind of so-called die-hard Nazis? Were there still people of this kind around?
These people say we were in us, when we got kicked them out, well, we didn't kick them out, the battalion, some of the battalion kicked them out for us to live there, and they were real arrogant, really, with us, you know. But you'd be the same if you're getting kicked out of your house, sort of thing, I suppose, you know. But I'll say after about, when they took the van off, about 6 weeks, I think, and we got pretty friendly later on, so we got used to getting a bit of food and whatnot. And as I say, well, I went back here 20 years after, and the kids was all grown up, and they recognised us in a minute, like, you know.
And this was a visit you made?
20 years afterwards, yeah.
So what was your daily routine at this stage in Bruckel? What would...
Well,
still
running around the company with letters, because they started getting mail pretty regularly, and, you know, there was all sorts going about with, I think they started the LEAP, the leave sort of thing after then, like, you know.
And what does LEAP stand for?
I started thinking about that.
But that was a leave programme to get back
to England. That was a leave to go back to England, like, no.
Now, you mentioned off the tape that some men were able to take advantage of this before the war ended. That they'd had...
Not before the war ended, no. Some people, some of the blokes, took prisoners back to this country, because chaps that I know lived in Leighton, like, they come home. Oh, no, that was... They took prisoners in Greece, and they brought them home to England, you know. Why, I don't know, but he'd come back and leave, but that LEAP never started till we was in Austria.
So it started by this time, then?
Yeah.
Now, so what was the process of being selected for LEAP? How did that work?
I think that it took your service, sort of thing, and your age group, and I think if you were married, I think they had preference, really. And I could have, I would have went earlier, but I say I was a single chap, like, and I waited a couple of months, but you know, but the married men or them were perhaps wounded and been recovering from injuries or something. You know. But it was pretty well organised, really.
Now you'd been abroad. Oh, you've been in the army for over nearly five years. You've been abroad for 3 years.
Yeah.
Now, some of your friends and colleagues have taken advantage of LEAP and they've been home and they'd come back to the battalion. Was there any kind of talk about how England, Britain had changed? You'd see somebody
like often. Like Dickie Craggs, he was a dispatch writer. He went back and found his wife at Rig was a Yankee sort of thing, you know, that sort of thing. And there was quite a lot of that happened, actually. Chaps come back and their wives would start involved in other people, like, you know. And that was a bit of a shock to Dickie Carr. He used to tell us everything, you know, and Dick did. Dick was older than me, so he'd be about 31 then, so he was one of the first ones to go home. Well, in the early group anyway, you know. But when he got home, he found a lot of trouble, you know.
So that was like a cautionary tale, really, about it.
Well, yeah. But that happened to lots of people, I think, that one he realised afterwards, you know.
Was there anything in place in the battalion to help men in that situation, you know, like the padre or the...
Yeah, I was going to see meet the people, I think he was still there with us already. He was a nice fellow, the padre, really, you know. He always... got any problems, you thought you want to have a word with him, you know.
Was there anything else apart from him that was any kind of...
Not really.
So if anything bad happened to you, you just had to cope with it?
As best you could, really. I believe some of them had big problems and they got put in front of the queue to come home, like, you know. That sort of thing.
So there was like compassionate ground, you could make a case for that. So did you actually go on LEAP?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
But not until when?
That would be October till November.
Yeah, so that's a little bit later than where we are at the moment. According to the battalion history, you moved from Brookhall.
Yeah, we went to Wealden, that's right, yeah.
And what were your duties there?
Just the same, round about on a bike. But there was one sergeant there, he got friendly with one of the Austrians, and when we moved to Wealden from Brockle, I'd be up at 100 bar, I reckon, and I brought this sergeant, he kidded me to bring him back to Brockle to see this woman, like, you know, and he was a business sergeant, but an old sergeant in battle, I reckon. He was a cook. I remember bringing him back to Brockle.
So this is 100 miles on the bike?
Yeah, enough, 100 miles, yeah.
And that was easy enough for you to do?
Yeah, I managed to do it somehow, you know, but lot of people were getting relaxed then because the war had finished and they were just all looking forward to going home and all this business, you know.
When you were on, just a general point, during the campaign in Italy and in Greece and Austria, obviously you would have your dispatch that you had to take to a particular place.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you have like a special pass or anything like that when you were, you know, in rear areas, you know, going back to Rome or to Naples or
I put the blue and white armband on, you know, like signals, did I just signal dispatch right already, you know.
But would there be any special paperback to deal with kind of military, special paperwork rather to deal with any kind of...
No, not really, no.
So the... It would basically just be the fact that you were a dispatch rider.
Yeah.
And that would be accepted.
Yeah, more or less, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, the MPs, you know, the army MPs, you know, not the battalion ones, you know, the only military police, they sometimes stop you and ask you, but, you know, yeah, have you got this band on them, just let you carry on sort of thing.
And you'd have your paybook as well.
Oh, yeah, everything we have.
Now, apparently, at Wealden, you took over from Russian troops here.
Yeah.
What do you remember about these men?
I'll say there was some real rough character. Well, they looked rough characters. But I say when we got to Vienna, they were smart, really smart soldiers. Because the 16th done the guard, nearly the first guard at Vienna, when There was the French one, the Yanks, and us. Four, wasn't it? But the Dunhams was one of the first to do that, the time in Guardia Vera. Yeah. And I'd been on leave. And when I come back, I leave when they had marched past in Vienna. I just come back.
Well, we'll talk about the leave then. How did you get back to England from Austria?
We'll come back with train, you know, from Italy all the way through. Well, to this country sort of thing, you know. That was about, what, 2 nights and a half journey, something like that, 3 nights perhaps, you know.
And a party of about how many men would be leaving from the battalion?
It would be a train load, but it would be all from different regiments, sort of thing, you know.
So about how many from
the battalion, I always think of what it would be about.
Perhaps 30.
At time, something like that. And of course then they started going every month, you know, really.
So what was your impressions of England coming back after so long away?
Well, the train ride was magic, really. Because there was, well, two or three of us together later on. We'd all got a bottle of wine or something in a kit bag to bring home in his business, you know. And it was quite pleasant. I was impressed coming through Switzerland because Switzerland was spotlessly clean, you know. It was we stopped at the train, I think, you know, we stopped every now and again, like, you know. But Switzerland really impressed me with the cleanliness of the place. And coming through the Alps and what, you know. Through, I think it was about 2.5 days, it appears, to come back to England.
And what was your impression of England? Has it changed in those 2 years?
Well, you can see, I come to London and I come back late in Buzzards, right? And you can see all of the bombing, you know. But, yeah, I didn't take a lot of notice, just pretty see it all, sort of thing, you know.
And what did you do during your leave?
Well, during the war, my mum and dad come down to this country. And they'd moved here, you know, after I'd been in the war, right? After I'd joined up and everything, you know. Because my mother had a sister down late in Buzzard, and she lived with the sister of my dad. Then they got a house in Leighton. Then when I come back, my mum and dad met me on the station at Leighton Buzzard. And we had a month at home, like. Of course, I knew the wife before I went abroad, and of course I spent a lot of time with her. Then we decided to get married when I come home. So I wait till Christmas then, the following Christmas before I got married. And that was it. Pleased to get on.
What did you feel about still being in the army?
Well, it didn't matter a lot, because everybody got uniform on, my thing. And so we went back to Italy, the same train journey, and while I'd been on leave, the battalion was more or less getting disbanded then. But I was due for release at the beginning of the year, sort of thing. And we lived in a slush. There was quite a lot of us in this little castle, you know. And more or less, the time was getting disbanded and getting organised then, people, you know, disappearing. And I stopped at this loss in round about Graz, it was, until my group come up and, you know, come back home again.
What do you think about the battalion being disbanded, the news of that?
Well, you see a lot of friends going, and I think we was all just pleased to get out, really, you know.
Because apparently there was a battalion magazine, and we've looked at some. That's what we've looked at.
That's when they started doing that magazine. That was after the war finished. They started doing that, and the one I missed, I think I could have been on leave then. And
so the battalion still had a spirit, obviously. That they Now, apparently there was a ski school around about this time that they were teaching some men who'd been taught to ski. Do you have any involvement with that?
The little kids taking the mick out of us. We was trying to ski, like, you know, and of course we're making a real mess of it, really. And these little toddlers, you know, become down, real, you know, unbelievable. But a good laugh there, yeah.
So did you produce any good skiers in the battalion?
Oh, I can't remember. There were some of the chaps picked out pretty quick, like quicker than others, you know. Well, I got on pretty well at the end, but, you know, but there were some of them, you know, I'd done it before, really, you know, some of the officers, and they were pretty good.
Now,
but, see, it was a different snow. It's a dry snow, not a wet one that we get.
Now, just going back to the ceremonial parades in Vienna, were you involved in that parade, or was that a...
No, I say I just... Well, I wasn't involved in the parade. I was there, like. I see it all. But I can't remember much of the parade. But I say I'd just come back from leave, and that's when the battalion was more or less started breaking up, really.
Now, apparently...
we'd done a lot of cross-country running up there, didn't we, then, by that time?
Did you take part in that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I took part in that. I'll never forget, was the RSM, Thomason. And we done it about 20 miles. Mind you, we was all pretty fit lads. And but we was, me and the RSM were getting about knackered. And we run with each other to the group got home, like, you know, and I kept talking to him, he talked to me, keep going green, all this sort of thing, you know. Yeah, I remember that.
Can you remember what position you finished then?
Oh, look at that. Well, around about the 20 marks, I think, aren't you? But we'd done about 20 miles. But we was real... When we'd stopped, you know, you just lay down and everything was going round and round. We was, you know, we'd had a fair old do. But the RSM kept himself pretty fit. You know, he's always a sportsman, he was, really.
Now, apparently, this was still kind of the era of shortages in the black market. Do you have any memories of that during your periods, you know, in Austria and in Vienna, you know, things that were in demand from the British troops and things that...
After something, weren't
they? And things that the civilians...
No, I didn't get involved, not at all, really. Not. But obviously, there was a lot of people who did. Then they got access to, like, petrol and all this sort of thing, you know, and obviously that going on.
So this was going on?
Oh, yeah.
People were aware of it. Now, so... News of the battalion disbandment was coming through. How did that affect you? Specifically, what happened to you at this stage?
I said that was started happening like when I was coming back from leave. And that's why I was in, I think it was 27 group coming out, which was an early group, really, at that stage. And I think there was quite a gang of us that lived in this, an old castle. But the battalion, well, half the battalion was there, really, and oh, and we just more or less waiting to go on then, sort of thing, you know. Because I took the ball back off us then, because I'd only got about 2 months to do, sort of thing.
So what were your duties after them? What were your duties?
We didn't do I was in the cookhouse, I think, in this slosh sort of thing, you know, helping in there, I think. Doing odd jobs, really, you're filling the time, really.
So how did the news of the demobilisation come through to you? You were in this place, filling in time, in the cookhouse.
Yeah, well, that was when that was after the war finished, wasn't it? When I was in the slough. I was just waiting to, well, get demobbed, really. And I say I was in 27 group, I think it was. And we got all our gear together and back to in the train and back to Aldershot.
And about how many of them were demobbed at the same? How many men were with you from the battalion, do you think?
Quite a few of the battalion, but of course there was a lot more from other units as well on the same train load sort of thing, you know. There was quite a troop in the battalion, I was, yeah.
The people that had been left behind, did obviously everybody, what were their thoughts about their future?
Well, you're talking it was them going, getting finished, sort of thing, wasn't
it? So everybody was keen.
Yeah.
Was there any thought in your mind of maybe...
There was a lot of them thought about stopping in the army because they didn't know... Well, I suppose they got used to the army doing and they wanted to serve a bit more time. And, yeah, there was quite
Can you remember any specific people that you knew that had... That were thinking along those lines. anybody in the signal platoon or men that had come with you from the Bezenards?
I remember there was quite a few thought about it, really.
Did you think about it?
No, I wanted to get out, I didn't.
What was it about the army that you wanted to see the battle of then?
Well, I don't know, I made some of us a good friends in the Durham, really, and funny enough, when I come out, I was always proud to say that when they asked me where I'd been, I said I was in the 16th Battalion of Durham's, and I was always proud to tell them that. Funny, wasn't it? Because the best sort of people I've ever been with, really. Really good people. And I got on so I made a lot of friends. You know. But I like most of them, you know, really. Yeah, I was always proud to say I was still armed. I always had served in the Durham. Yeah.
So you moved back to England, Aldershot?
To Aldershot. We had a medical first, and I don't forget the medical officer. He said, "Well, this is the fittest lot of blokes I've ever come across," he said. And that was the Durham. That was us lot. The Durham, isn't that funny? Yeah.
And what happened then?
Then, of course, we went to get measured for the suit. What have you. And I think that took a full day, if not more. We got kitted out. Take all the army stuff back we got in, you know.
What did you think about the suit?
It was all right, you know. Funny enough, I had mine for quite a number of years. It wasn't too bad at all.
Did you have much choice?
No, not really, no. You just got measured up and, you know, that was it, like, you know. No, not choice about it at all.
So what kind did you get?
I don't know, just on in blue suit, and in blue suit, yeah.
Now, you'd had a long progress to get from Austria back to England. What thought had you given to what you were going to do after the war?
Well, I come home and I'd got a fair bit of money to come back with. I think we must have had about 60 or 70 quid, I'm not sure. Something that would come at your credit, because we never drew a lot of money when we were in the doings. So. And I think I was, oh, it's come off, is it? No.
So you were saying, sorry?
No, I said, you know, I had this bit of money, and I think I had about 3 weeks or something, you know, just knocking about, like. And of course, then you started thinking about what can you do, what would you like to do? And I said, me being a miner, you know, I'd done a lot of when I was steel erecting over here for a bit. When I decided to start a job lorry driving, I say I hadn't had a lot of experience at all, but there was all plenty of work around this area because there was the brickyards, the cement works, the sand pits, you know, and you could take your pick, really. Anyway, so after I see a couple of mates what they were doing sort of thing, and I thought, well, I can go to lorry driving, because there was a lot of employment with lorries because of the bricks and the cement and the sand in this area, you know. And
had you learned to drive four-wheeled vehicles in the army?
Not a great lot, but I found out that you'd got all the road experience being on a bike, you know. It might sound laughable, but I had a go in one of the jeeps and all that sort of thing, obviously during the time in the war, you know, with the basic things, really. And there was a lot of advertising for drivers down at the time, like. And I went and see him, he was Oxfordshire man, he was. And he says, yes. And I went mating with the bloke that was an Arctic. He got Arctics and lorry and trailers. And I went mating with them for about a fortnight. You know, and getting to see what they do, delivering bricks from London and all this sort of thing, because everything was building up on it. And I started, after I'd had about a fortnight mucking about, and I got my own vehicle and I just carried on from there. Well, I stopped with this fella for about 3 years, and then nationalisation come. And that got a bit awkward, because where I was working, I got paid with what I'd done, And I was out and about, but I think it was £11.70 used to get if I'd done 5 load of bricks to around there, you know. Well, then when the nationalisation come, this chap, he got a contract with the brickyard, and they took his vehicles off him. And I thought, oh, this, I don't think a lot to this. And because everything turned over to BRH Road Services then, so, you know. Well, I couldn't believe this. I said, you can't.